Pretty Animal here, July 15th, 2009. I've been sick as a dog for the last week, but do you think anybody has any pity on me? Since Monday afternoon, I've been getting tons of messages. You know what they're all about? The Bill Boorman Show. The Bill Boorman Show. So I'm going to read you a few of these messages because they're kind of interesting. They show you what kind of people I have to deal with. Hey, Animal, your show sucks. Bill Boorman's the new kid in town, and he's going to bury you. Hey, Animal, want to know what a good show sounds like? Listen to Bill Boorman, Mondays at 1 p.m., like I don't know. Hey, Animal, see what happens when you don't cut people off? The show gets interesting. And finally, dear Animal, you've been on the show. You had your show for 2 years, and Bill's been on for 2 weeks, and his show is already 10 times better than yours. And all those were signed. I know every one of those people, but I won't mention their names. But I want to thank them for writing in and giving me all that constructive criticism. It really sounds like Bill has the kind of personality that makes good recruiters want to share their knowledge, and I guess I don't, because when the very same people come on my show, they just clam up, or they get real boring, real fast, and that's when I have to step in and try to drag them out of the muck. Now, let me say just now that if you're about to listen to the Recruiting Animal Show and you want to learn something about recruiting, well, maybe you better go and listen to the Bill Boorman archive instead so I don't have to listen to your complaints. But if you're here now and you want to stay, let me tell you that at 1 p.m., I'll be having Maureen Sherub here with her telephone sourcing show. And Maureen told me, listen to this, to tell you that her topic today is the Socratic method of telephone sourcing. She told me that, and I said, listen, Maureen, our audience didn't go to college. They don't know what the Socratic method means. And she said, well, let's call it telephone sourcing in ancient Greece. And I said, Maureen, are you trying to bury me? Bill Boorman's not talking about ancient Greece. She said, look, Animal, I want to do a series about ancient wisdom in the modern world. The next session is telephone sourcing in the Bible. I said, Maureen, please, no religion. She says, listen, St. Peter's a gatekeeper, isn't he? He's fair game. And I said, look, you want to talk about Socrates? Go ahead. Plato, Aristotle, I don't care. I got a show of my own to worry about. And guess what? My guest today is a guy named Scotty Gordon. And I got to tell you, the only reason he's on this show is because I owe JD money. And this guy Scott's doing a series for him on Recruiting 101. Jason calls me up and says, you put this guy on to promote my site, or you're going to have to pay me back right away. So I'm very happy to have him here today, Scotty Gordon. Jerry, are you there? Can you tell me what show this is?
The Recruiting Animal Show! Mike.
Stop the music.
Mike.
Who's that?
It's Jason.
Jason Davis.
You said you weren't going to say anything about that.
Well, come on. If I'm going to take Paola, at least I should let the people know.
No, but you promised that you weren't going to say anything about that.
People don't even know what Paola is anymore. Forget about it.
All right. Well, listen. I just want to tell you.
Let me just see if Scott's here for a second. Hold on. Scott, are you here? Let's see if the guest made it. Oh, hold on. Let me open his mic.
I thought this was a
cooking
show.
Scott, are you there?
Absolutely, I'm here.
Oh, thank goodness. I didn't think you'd make it. You know what, JD? Your man, your boy, calls me an hour before the show. He emailed me. He didn't call me. He says, I didn't know I had to have anything to talk about. Thanks. Thanks.
Can I just say one thing, Mike? Because I know you like these stories. You know I'm into domain names, and I just bought a new domain name.
Okay, what is it?
Talent Tubbies.
Love it.
Scott, do you like that, Scott? Talent Tubbies?
It's about recruiting for kids with puppets.
Where would they go to work?
Well, the idea is that you always talk to recruiters, you ask them how they got into the business, and none of them really grew up planning to be a recruiter. So I thought, why not give the kids a chance to learn?
Okay, great. Very good.
Yeah,
very
and
good,
one
JD.
Other thing, and I got another one, Planned Talenthood.
I dig that one.
Well, I don't get it.
A whole other topic for the next
RecruitingNoggin.com is available.
Okay, well, no, let me read from you. I've written something on my, so you can, this is what's going to be on the site. In an overpopulated talent pool, you can't just put an ad in the paper. You need a strategy that lets you control the size of your pipeline.
Very good. And that Planned Talenthood. Okay, fine.
Yeah, and I've got some other ideas, too.
Are talents allowed to use it?
You want to hear the other ones?
There's more.
Well, yes and
forget
no.
Forget it. No. We got to get a show. It's 5 after already. You take a back seat. Scott's here. Scott, the topic
Jason,
is...
Jason, RecruitingNoggin.com.
Yeah, very good, Maureen. Don't listen to her today, let me tell you. She's trouble.
Bill Borman here?
I don't know. Bill,
he's
are you
doing
here?
He's doing his own show, right?
Yeah, I hear he's got his own show, yeah.
It's going head to head with yours,
Bill.
Okay. Let's just go ahead. Scott, do you have an elevator speech? You want to tell people who you are, or should I?
Go ahead. I want to hear what you have to say.
Were you a divisional director at Robert Half?
Yeah.
Okay. The topic for today is recruiting 101.
Don't you think a guy with a title like that
shouldn't worry? If someone asks him what recruiting 101 is, he should be able to talk about it in his sleep. Okay, you have no answer. Listen, I want to sing a song before we get going. Does anybody know Josh Letourneau? Maureen knows who he is. Okay, he had a posting on Fistful of Talent this week, and he said it's a really hard time now for candidates. They're psychologically unstable. He didn't say unstable, but he really meant that. They're depressed. So he said recruiters have to be a lot nicer to them than usual.
Have to be therapists?
Just nicer. Like Maureen, you're a therapist. Just nicer, okay? So I picked a song for us to sing for all the candidates out there. Everybody's got to sing with me. Everybody knows the song. It's by Stevie Wonder again. And it's I Just Called to Say I Love You, okay?
Okay.
Who's coming? Who's in on this, Jason?
I'm in.
Scott,
I'll do backup.
Okay. Scott, are you singing?
Absolutely.
Rayanne's on.
Rayanne?
Carla's here.
Carla, you're going to sing?
I will.
Okay, everybody, awesome. I am singing even if nobody else does. But please, there's tons of people here. If we all sing, nobody will hear our
individual
voices.
You have one of those
voices.
Little things that you blow into. You know how the nuns used to blow into?
Yeah, okay. The pitch pipe, forget it.
Yeah,
okay.
If you have one, go ahead and blow.
Here we go. I just called to say
I love you.
I just called to say how much I care. How come I'm the only one? Forget
we need
it.
The pitch pipe.
You know, I got to tell you, these guys are gutless. Baby. Who's that? Someone's singing very slightly in the background there. Okay, Scott, do you have something you want to bring up? You did talk today on the website about the Matrix. I don't know anything about that. You want to tell us about it?
Absolutely.
You need a television. You need a television to watch that.
You do. Clarify. I was with Robert.
Hold on, will you? I'm the host. There's a lot of people here today.
You ask me questions and ask me what I want. Let's go. Come on.
There's a lot of people here. I just want to tell them, feel free to butt in on Scott. Don't be polite. If you think he's saying something that doesn't make sense or you have a good idea, just jump in. Okay, Scott.
Please.
What's the Matrix?
Just to clarify real quick, the I was with Robert Half for a little over 5 years and left, and that's when we formed the company that I'm with now. It's Vaco. Much, much more different. Cultural fits and things like that are much more important to us. But back on to the Matrix. And some people call it the Matrix. Some people call it their pipeline. I've always called the matrix forever. The matrix is your list of candidates and your list of available candidates. And I've run into more people. And when Jason and I talked about it, it was, you know, he said, I need some sort of some entry-level things that sometimes people forget. And sometimes people forget when they get comfortable.
Hey, we don't need the intro. I asked you what the matrix is. Just get to the point.
Have you seen the show?
It's your list of candidates. Is that, you've got, you keep a list of
Scott, he hasn't seen it. They don't let him out of his house, and he has no television.
That's sad. Yeah, okay. No wonder he has a radio show.
If this was the Bill Borman show,
yeah,
we would have already covered several pretty good steps
Jerry,
for recruiters by now.
Jerry, you're saying. Recruiting 101, you take over. You ask the guy.
No, I'm just commenting.
Scott. What's the matrix?
The matrix is quite simply your list of available candidates, and it's your job to keep that matrix up to date. If you lose one, replace it. Look at the city and your respective markets. Look at the last 50 people that you placed, and that builds your own matrix. So in technology, if it's a Microsoft town, you break it down by Microsoft, by Oracle, by Java, et cetera, et cetera. It's your job as a recruiter to have a full matrix all of the time. I wrote last night, I've never had a full matrix all of the time. But you
That's
should.
That's
you're, a niche, you're a niche guy then. A generalist wouldn't be able to do that, right?
Well, a second. Hold on. Wait just one second. JD said that there's an overpopulated talent pool right now. How do you decide who's on your pipeline?
Well, it's my opinion is who I think's better than who. Typically in one given skill set, I'm going to have three. I mean, I'm going to have the best three. I may interview 10. I'm not going to use all 10.
Okay. Anybody want to talk to him about that? Anybody else use that technique? I never heard of it before.
You always have to have some candidates ready to go. I mean, of course, that's 101 stuff, Animal.
Is it?
Yeah.
I never heard of that.
That in the business is what we call a talent puddle, right, everyone?
Exactly. So say you're in, and if you're, I'm a dedicated 100% recruiter. So if my account guys come to me and say, Scott, I need a blah 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 developer, I don't immediately go out to the web or go to my database. I should know three of those immediately. If one of those, and it's my job to maintain contact with those. If two of those people get hired within a week, that means that I've got two spots that I need to fill within that matrix.
Okay, are those guys who are actively looking for jobs or just people you know are good and you'd call if a position came up?
Those are active, and also they're passive active, meaning that if the right opportunity came available, they'd be ready to go.
Okay. Anybody else want to talk about that?
That's why there are three of them.
This is Recruiting 101. I assume everybody's doing something like that, or most people except me.
That's probably usually the case.
It's all about speed to market. It's speed to market. You can be reactive or you can be proactive. And if you're reactive, I don't think you're going to lose.
I mean, it sounds like to me just like most placeable candidates. I mean, you're in.
That's exactly what it is.
How do you make a decision who the most placeable candidates are?
It's based on my knowledge of what it is that they can do. It's based on things like simple things like references and technical evaluations and their reputation in the market.
How do you make a decision, though, about their readiness to make that change? They might have all the requisite skills and all the competencies necessary for the job. How do you decide in the end they're ready to make the change?
Who is that asking the question?
Who do you think it is?
I don't know.
It's Homula.
It's the product method in action.
Well, it's Michael Homula. He's quieter on this show.
Yeah, the wine guy.
Yeah. Look, I got to tell you something. Just like Jerry said, we could talk about this. I listened to Bill's show the other day. Everybody talked about niche recruiting. You are kind of, if you're working in a certain niche, you could have these are my goods, come and see what's in my window, essentially. Mm-hmm. But if you're a generalist recruiter, just like Jerry said, you don't know what, you got guys in your database, you never know what you're going to be recruiting for one day to the next.
But you
right?
can develop, I think that's easily developed, even though you're a generalist recruiter. Look at the last 40 to 50 positions that you've placed in your respective market. That helps develop a matrix, and I think that that's simple enough.
Does anybody disagree with them? There's 14 people on the line. Area code 817. Who's that?
It's Craig Fisher.
What do you think, Craig?
And it's also Jeff Lipschultz.
Well, the twins. What do you think, you guys? The Astro. What's the kind of name of your company?
It's A-List Solutions.
A-List Solutions. These guys are partners. Craig first. Craig
He's
first.
On. He's dead on. You've got to know your skill.
Hey, can you talk into your phone?
A speakerphone is a clear violation of this.
Sorry. You got to know your skill buckets, and he's right. You can look back at your last 40 to 50 placements and make generalizations about where you're placing the most people and fill those buckets up on a regular basis. I just wrote about that on the Cruder Talk Carnival.
That's what your article's about?
That's one of the things it's about. It's about time management with your candidates.
Do you want to add something to it? Is that it? Is that what you're going to say?
Yes.
Okay. Jeff Lipschultz.
Yes, sir. I think Craig's dead on. I mean, it's a matter of just and the earlier comments, it's a matter of knowing your talent well enough to know where to go when those openings come up. You have to go right to your resources that you should have been cultivating for a long time.
Right. Okay. That's it. Everybody agrees on that? Area code 517, who are you?
Oh, that's Michael Homula.
Okay.
Yeah,
oh, he talked to you already.
Say,
okay.
Familiar. Lansing.
816, area code 816, who's that?
Hey, it's your girl, Christy Jones in Kansas City.
Christy, well, you know, I have to congratulate her. Christy got a new photo on Twitter. She took my advice. Congratulations. Do you have an opinion here about this matrix or, you know, best candidates in your talent puddle?
No, it is interesting because I focus more on HR positions, so I'm more of the niche person, too, so...
But you know who your HR – if you had to call five HR people that were specific to payroll, you'd know who to call immediately, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I would. I have a good talent and network as far as HR people, yes.
Then there's your matrix. But I think the key is on my side is just keeping that updated because I'm in technology. So the career span for someone in IT, you think about during .com, it was like 4 to 6 months. So I had people coming and going all the time.
Yeah.
Now it's a year and a half. But now that the economy is in some markets in the United States is coming out of a slump, people are starting to bump around a little bit more. So it forces me to maintain focus on that and not so much what the account guys are doing. I'm only looking at what I have to do. And then there are those days where I feel like I don't have anything to do because I've got everybody submitted, everybody's interviewing, and I think, oh my goodness, if all the people that I have interviewing get their jobs. My matrix is going to suck.
Yeah.
So how
do you fill your matrix? Last question on matrix, I think. How do you fill your matrix once you've lost a guy or two people, you placed them, or they got jobs somewhere else?
Well, the matrix, it's you're always recruiting, always. So if one person falls out, I'll slide someone else in that I think is as good or equally as good or a new person that I find. But,
okay, when you say you're always recruiting, what do you mean? Like when Jerry was talking the other day, it sounds like, he's not recruiting anybody for a specific position necessarily. He's just talking to people in his field. So he would put those guys.
No, I'd like to correct that. I'm always trying to talk to people about something specific, but that's usually just the stimulus for having a broader context discussion.
Yeah,
okay, so then
I'm not just ambiguously calling people to say hello.
Yeah, uh-huh. You target a candidate based on the client.
Who's that?
They
talking
work.
To the phone. We can't hear you.
Matt Jones, Chicago.
Don't you have phones in Chicago? Are you on a headset?
I'm on a headset, animal.
Talk into the handset. Can you go to the handset?
Yes, sir.
Okay, because, you know, I heard you the other day on Bill's show. We couldn't hear you really either. Pick up that handset.
That was a great show.
Thanks for writing. I already got your letter about that. You know, Jerry threatened me after the show. He's not going to do the announcement on my show anymore. He's going to go to Bill if I don't improve.
This is Maureen. Can I interject?
Yeah, what do you know?
Jason wants to say something.
Go ahead. Someone got to say something?
Is Jason, are you there?
No, he's not here. Okay.
He says he keeps trying to butt in, but he can't get in.
Yeah.
Okay, well, he's here. Matt Jones in Chicago. Are you ready?
I have a question.
Well, it's Matt Jones. Give him his chance, Maureen.
All right, 30 seconds. I mean, you might target a candidate that works at a specific client that you want to gather more information to from our business development standpoint as well and to figure out who he might know as, you know, to fill
Does
that
Does anybody
matrix.
Understand what he's saying?
He talks really
can
fast.
Can anybody hear him? Talk slower because we can't really hear you. You're real fuzzy. Do you use that phone for work?
The phone works. Can you hear me now?
Talk slow.
Animal. You might target candidates at a specific client that you're trying to break in that uses a specific technology as well. That's all I was trying to say.
So what
keep
does that
talent
mean?
Going.
What
keep
does that
talent.
Mean?
To fill your matrix of talent.
Okay, so you might
know,
go recruiting people in a target company to fill your talent bucket. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, because you're going to be able to market them to other their competitors.
Okay, thanks, everybody. Okay.
And this is turning into recruiting 001. I mean,
well, did Jerry, what did he talk about?
No, I'm just, you know, I'm just listening and commenting. I'm sniping from the gallery.
What's the next topic? Here, I'll talk about Jerry. Here's the topic for Jerry. Are you there, still there, Scott?
Yeah.
Okay.
We'll give Scott the first chance at this topic, though.
Yeah, no, okay. Scott's got a blog called The Anti-Pimp. The Anti-Pimp, right?
Anti.
Anti-Pimp, sorry. Listen, you're down there.
Like anti-prosty.
Okay. Yeah, what is that supposed to mean anyway? Anti-hyperbole or anti-hype or what does that mean?
Here's the quick and dirty. I hate going to user groups. I absolutely hate them. And over the years, everybody I think on this call has been called a headhunter or a handler or a broker or a pimp or things like that. And it's all
or
been
a consultant.
Said. Absolutely, it's all been said. Yeah, consultant. Yeah, that was good. That was, it's
that was
all been
high
said.
Grammar there.
Yeah, it's all been said underneath a candidate's breath. They're never going to call you a pimp to their face. That's
can you talk faster or get to the point?
Dude, you just told Matt Jones to slow down.
That's his way. Don't get offended.
No, I'm all good. I'm smiling. That's why I can't talk. So, anyway, I had gone to a user group, and I didn't carry business cards. And the guy sitting behind me was a developer, software developer, and he said, "Do you have a business card?" And I said, "No." And he said, "What do you mean you don't have a business card? And you're at a user group?" And I said, "No, I don't carry business cards." And he said, "Well, you're not like the other ones." And I said, "What are you talking about?" He said, "You're not like one of the other pimps." And he said, "You're really sort of like an anti-pimp." So I took it and ran with it, and I like that. I mean, I make my job fun. My job is, and especially for my company, is all about culture and being sort of a not as cornball as a consultant or something like that. It's being a partner with the person that you're trying to help. That what we do isn't rocket science. So, you know, it's trying to help somebody find a job. And if I can partner with somebody to help them find a job, that's quite simple.
Yeah, okay, what do you mean by culture? Let's take that as the next topic. Culture. You said culture's a big thing at your company.
Absolutely.
What do you mean by that? What do you mean by it?
Well, after coming out of Robert Half, which is a Fortune 100, Fortune 500 company, and it's typically, you know, they've got multiple companies underneath one umbrella. There's a typical there is a culture there of a white shirt and tie, and it's very stringent, and you know, it's a formed recipe that's brought in by somebody else, and it's adhered to strictly for umpteen years, even though parts of it may be wrong and outdated. We figured out that there's a better way to do it, and it's to be able to use your own style to get your job done, and it works extremely well for us.
Okay, so you guys are independent, right? Is that what you're saying? Inside
absolutely.
Your own company.
Yeah.
So you wear t-shirts or tank tops or something like that. Is that what you're saying?
Nope. I'll tell you what. I fit my audience.
Okay. You know what? I thought it was more interesting than that. I mean, like, we all wear shorts when we're working. Jerry, what are you wearing?
I've got a rock and roll T-shirt on and some reasonably tight fitting.
This is like an AOL chat.
I don't know, some kind of corporate bubble. Most of the people here aren't like that. It's Craig, what are you wearing? Craig, what are you wearing right now? Nobody else wants to say. Okay, what's the next topic?
This is going the way of Brian Hansen.
Ryan wants to talk.
What's
okay.
Michael Homula wearing? What do you got on today, Michael?
I'm rocking some Adidas sweatpants and a Too Skinny Jays T-shirt. There you go.
Oh,
the stretch pants.
Okay, before I forget, the anti-pimp, you've got a motto on your blog. Am I right?
Yeah.
What is it?
Everything you know is wrong.
Yeah, you know why? Because you're saying in your promo, you said everything's changing all the time, right?
Right.
And then Jerry put a posting under there. He said nothing changes. He said I'm doing the exact same stuff, the recruiting basics, the recruiting 101 that I was doing 10 years ago. And if you would have asked me what I was doing 10 years ago, he'd say I was doing the same things that I was doing 10 years before that.
All right.
And then
man,
I
that
saw
was a
your
classic.
Comment.
I love that.
You caved entirely. You said, Jerry, you're right. You came with this thing. Everything changes. Everything's always wrong because it's changing so fast. And then you were down on your knees before this hillbilly. What's the story there?
I'll tell you what, my blog is geared not toward other recruiters. I don't write for other recruiters. I write for candidates. So you know what? Everything you know is wrong if you're a candidate. The candidates that I started recruiting were old mainframe guys, your typical geeks with the pocket protectors and things like that. You have a younger generation that comes out that has spoken to that older generation and thinks that what we do should be a certain way. So everything they know is wrong.
Give
when
us
you
an
walk
example.
In, when you walk
Give me
into
an
my
example.
That you're not going to be handled like a piece of meat when you walk into my office. That's not how I roll.
Okay.
So
you
everything
we didn't bring you here to advertise your company. Okay, what's the next topic in Recruiting 101? Michael Homula, you're a trainer. Come on, what should we talk about?
Well, I think Scott's onto something there, and I don't want to. I mean, I hate to take the side of the guest here, but the fact of the matter is that he is right to the sense that things are changing. Candidate expectations are changing and shifting. And that does mean that we have to adjust. Jerry is 100% correct. I am doing the same job that I was doing when I started in this business 15-plus years ago. Some of the tools I employ have changed. But the recruiting call is a recruiting call. It hasn't changed since the inception of this freaking business. But we do have to adjust sometimes the tactical nature of that recruiting call and the way we manage and handle candidates and the
point.
Way we treat them.
You can't just give me the fluff. What are you saying?
Well, I'm saying you got to engage candidates at their level. You've got to meet them where they are, and that means that you have to do the things that they want you to do. Candidates have some control in this process now, unlike what they used
to. I don't understand a word you're saying. As long as I have you on the phone, though, I'm going to take you to task on something. You said on Bill's show the other day, it was shocking, no one challenged you. I was there, but no one could hear me, apparently. You said if Bill asked you, what would you be asking a recruiter if you were going to hire him? And this is what you said. I should have cut it out and played it, but I'll read it. What were your billings last year? How many new clients did you generate? How many job orders did you get? How many positions did you fill? What was your job order to placement ratio? Couple more. How many candidates that you're connecting with are you placing? And I can't remember what else you said. There was some other thing there. Has anybody ever asked you for all that information? And I want all the recruiters online to tell me, are they so transparent that they would give out all that information to an unknown client? Michael Homula first.
Hey, I'm not asking them to tell me who their clients are. I'm just asking them to give me some numbers. And then what I'm going to do is I'm going to get deeper on that. I'm going to ask them how they did it. Why do you do it that way? I try to get behind them.
Just
give him a chance.
He's talking about if he were interviewing a recruiter to work at his recruiting company, right, Michael?
No.
You got it, Jerry. That is what I'm talking about.
Animal's
I think you might have misunderstood
that
me.
The client would ask you to tell you your billings and stuff. Two different people
asking
the question.
Hell no, I would never answer that question.
You guys are talking about billings as far as, like, what was your total gross margin for the year, not your bill pay. Is that what you're talking about?
Go back and listen to that show. Bill said, what would you be asking a recruiter in order to prove you could do the job for him? That's if you were a client, and you gave him all this stuff. Nobody said a peep, and now you're telling me you'd never say that if you were a client, and that no recruiter should ever answer that.
No, I was talking about if I were interviewing a recruiter to become a recruiter.
Okay, that's not what he was asking you. Okay, done.
No, so the conversation went off in a different tangent. I think Jerry knows exactly where that conversation went.
Okay. Can I ask a question?
Go ahead.
Somebody was talking about candidates before, if they're ready, if they're not ready. What kind of answers do you like to hear from candidates? What speaks to you and tells you that they're ready to make a move?
I'll
talking
answer
about the
this.
Candidates that you keep in your, bottom drawer.
I'll answer
that. Pull out.
This is Scott. I'll answer that quickly. And I'm talking to you like you're a candidate. So you've said that you wanted these three things in this part of town for this amount of money. So say I had that opportunity available today. When would you be able to, and you went and interviewed and you fell in love with the position. When would you be able to start? Well, I need to go talk to my spouse. That person's not ready. Well, I'm not sure because I've got a review coming up. That person's not ready. If the position is perfect and the money is right, I'll give a 2 weeks' notice right after the interview. That person's ready.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody else want to comment on that?
I think you nailed it.
I've got one question that I pretty much use that tells me if somebody's going to be changing jobs, and that's what's happened recently that made you decide it's time for you to make a change? And if they don't have anything, then they really don't have any motivational factor. But typically, people that can pinpoint something, those people are going to make a move, whether it's...
Give us an example. Give us an example. I've never asked a question like that.
They worked on this project for 2 years. They were responsible for all the success of it, and the other guy got all the recognition, or somebody else was promoted.
Okay, so you call a guy out of the blue. You call someone out of the blue.
I'm having a conversation with him. I'm interviewing the person.
Yeah.
I wouldn't call somebody up and say, hey, Animal, I'm a recruiter. What's happened that made you decide you need to change jobs today?
Right.
Well,
right.
You guys are further
into
the conversation. I'm talking about when that passive candidate that you've got in your bottom drawer that you're friendly with, that you've taken out to lunch once a year, and you know that he'll make a move or is thinking about making a move, you call him and you say, how you doing? I've got this opportunity. What does he say right away that turns you on? I'm not talking about once you're into the conversation, you've presented it to him. I'm talking about what does he say when you first call him.
I think
saw a conversation on RBC in the last couple of days, and I'm not sure who was – Sandra was on it. I think Michael Hamula was on it. Jason was on it. And
yeah,
they were talking about this.
Go ahead.
They were talking about this, and I thought it was an interesting subject.
If you're transparent enough with your candidate –
Is this Scott?
Yeah, Scott, if you're transparent enough with your candidate and say, look, I don't want to waste your time, but this is my job too, and I can't waste my time, but I also can't waste my time, my client's time. I need to know from you that if I can get this set up, that you're going to be able, that you're going to be committed 100% to going in and trying to land this position. If you don't think that it's and if you don't think that that you could land it, or you're just not really there, then let me know. But the relationship that I've got with that candidate should be deep enough to be able to come forward and say that, because if they try to blow smoke up my dress, it's gonna damage the relationship, and I'm probably not going to call them as frequently because I think that they're on the fence all the time.
I think you're looking for, like,
who is this?
Jerry, don't you recognize
Jerry the hillbilly? I think you're looking for, and a lot of people seem to
wait,
be
wait,
looking
everybody's
for,
throwing about hillbilly. Jerry, where are you from?
Indiana.
Well, see, I'm from Tennessee, so I'm even much more of a hillbilly than you guys.
Everybody's from Kentucky somewhere.
Just to clarify my bloodline, I'm more redneck than I am hillbilly.
Okay.
But Maureen, I think you're looking
for... That's why
for,
we get along, then.
Yeah, these one particular questions that are going to tell you a huge yes or a definite no. You know, our job is nuance. It's how do they sound? What's their voice sound like when you say, hey, it's me?
Jerry, do you agree?
It's your phone number. Yeah. Do they write it down the first time? Can you tell that they can even speak well enough to write your phone number? It's everything.
Yeah.
It's all this stuff. There isn't a magic question.
Yeah. There's like
that can be judged as far as how they sound. That can be judged in 2 seconds. You know, I've got this great job, and it's right in your part of town. It's going to pay you what you want, and it's everything you talked about. What do you think if they go, well, I'm over it.
Yeah.
So if they say something like, well, if the money's right, you wouldn't blow them off.
If the money is so, but what
they're
you
money
and I
motivated.
What you and I discussed was that you wanted a salary of $90,000. The salary on this position is $90,000.
Well,
if the money's
jobs for salaries, Maureen, a salary will only confirm that it's the right job. People don't change for salaries.
Mm-hmm.
And
no, I agree with
that. Say that they will, you know, you're not talking to them about what their motivational factors are. You're talking about what the rewards that they would be getting are. Two different areas.
And there are hundreds of motivational factors.
Maureen, I'm a believer that people run from something as opposed to running to something.
Interesting.
So I think it all centers around why it's always going to come back to why they would leave.
And that's And that's what Jerry was saying. He's saying if you dig a little bit beyond these initial questions, Jerry's saying what's going on lately that would prompt you to leave, that's the running from aspect.
I got a question for Lipschultz now that he's on right now.
Uh-oh.
Okay, you said when you were talking to Bill, you were saying just what these guys are talking about. You said we're going to bring in who's making that noise?
Oh,
who's making that noise? Okay, you said you're gonna bring in a candidate that has no risk, and that's what these guys are talking about. Someone who's in the bag. If they make the offer, he says yes right then and there.
No one's in the bag 100%. But go ahead.
Everybody's a risk.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, to reduce the risk, that's what Lipschultz said he wants to do. Bring in the candidate who's committed. Now, you said a couple of things. that seemed pretty crazy to me. You said you asked, I think you were the one who asked this question. You said, tell me what the last five guys who quit, what was the reason for leaving? I'll bring in people who like what they don't like. Did you say that?
I said something like that, yeah.
Well, they're all leaving because they don't like something. How are you going to find some people who like that? Give me an example. Can you back it up?
I mean, some people hate a fast work pace. Some people don't like to be challenged and or don't like to work in certain teams and things like that. I mean, there's some generic things you could throw out there that people leave because they don't like it. And some people love that kind of stuff. Some people want to work in a dark closet. Some people want to be working next to a window and look out the window all the time.
No metaphors, okay? We're talking reality.
Does that answer your question?
So I want to know, does he have one example? You've got to press. Bill didn't press you guys. Give me an example.
I didn't give you examples right there. I mean, I had a candidate.
A real life example.
There was a guy who didn't want to work in a dark environment. That was a real example. He said, I worked in a basement for 2 years, and I don't want to work in a basement anymore. Other people love working in that kind of environment. So you're going to have to find somebody. It's a simple example, but you have to find somebody who likes that kind of environment.
Okay, before we go on, so I think Scott said he's got something to say. Does anyone else believe that some people like to work in basements? You know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Definitely.
Yeah.
I work in a basement, and I love it.
Nerds don't want to – technical people don't want to talk to anybody. They love it. Leave them alone.
Some do, some don't, but that's why you got to ask.
Okay, I got one more question for Jeff while he's there. He said – and this is what seemed to me, you know, he makes himself out to be a nice guy, and then when he starts talking about, you know, getting the risk-free candidate, he says you have to probe at the beginning to find out what the deal breaker is going to be with this person. And the way he said, you might think because the job is far away that the commute's going to be an issue. And as soon as he said that, he said, as soon as you think the commute is an issue, you start giving them all this crap about using audio books and coming in early and leaving early so you miss the rush hour. It sounds like you don't really care about that candidate. You just care about selling them on the job. Oh, the commute's an issue? It's not really an issue. And you've got these automatic plug-in rebuttals for whatever the guy says.
It's called overcoming rejection.
Well, I think you totally missed the point of what I was trying to say, though. That might have been true that I'm trying to sell them on the job. That's part of what I do, sure. But the point I was trying to make is you can easily misjudge what the problem is. The point of my discussion before was you look at someone's commute to a job.
I know what you were saying. Do you handle rebuttals in that manner?
No, I'm saying, do I handle rebuttals in that manner? Oh, you're changing gears here. I give them alternatives to think about in terms of the job, sure. I'm not going to tell them, the commute sucks. You shouldn't take this job. Is that what I'm supposed to say?
No, you're always going to say, don't worry about the commute. There's a way around it.
I'm not
always
going to say that. No, because if I do say that and it turns out to be the true problem, which is my point, if it turns out to be the true problem, I've just created risk myself by trying to sway them. And then what, 2 months later, under my guarantee, I'm replacing them.
Have to size up the concern that people bring up. I mean,
yeah, so you give them alternatives and say, well,
I mean, come on.
Yeah,
man. Are you a sales animal?
I mean, let me just finish. I mean, in terms of saying, it is a decent commute. Is that a problem for you? I can tell you that they're flexible in their work hours. You can get in early, leave late. Some companies you have to be there at certain times, and it doesn't work that way. So naturally, I'm going to give them the alternatives or the things to think about in terms of that particular issue, the commute. But
you're not going to push that there's no problem. You're going to say, think about this. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, exactly. You can't push because, again, you're the one who's trying to figure out what the risk is. If that is the true risk, the commute, as opposed to something else.
Okay, fine. There's 17 people here. Does anybody else want to talk about anything we've talked about so far?
This is Scott. I mean, going back to that, Jerry, I agree with your points, and I'm all about transparency, but it's sitting down I would rather be that way because I don't want something to come up and bite me in the butt later. If I tell a candidate to be that true partner, to say, look, it's my job to help you find a job, the last thing that I want to do is push a square peg in a round hole. Mm-hmm. If the commute sucks, I'm going to tell you that it sucks, but there may be an offsetting factor. It may be money, it may be skill set, it may be training, it may be chance for growth, but I can also tell you my track record with that client, which is going to help them make a decision. I've placed 10 people in the last 6 months, and they've quit, and here's exactly why they've quit. The candidate that's sitting in front of me at that moment may want a challenge. So being able to say, here's all the good stuff, but here's all the bad stuff, and let your candidate make the decision. Those are the candidates that continue to come back to me year after year after year after year that are consultants or that are tired of a permanent job because they know that what they get from me is going to be 100% the truth.
Okay. Now, J.T. O'Donnell had an article, "Is Your Accent Hurting You?" What about you? You got an accent.
Who does?
Who does?
Jeff Scott, the guy from Nashville.
I don't think he has an accent.
Wherever he's from.
Are you kidding? Right. Broadcasting schools, you pay big
okay.
money.
All right. Hey, that's
like
I really like that question because I had no idea we were going to discuss that today. I went to school in Arkansas, played football, blah, blah, blah. My sophomore year, I actually took a class called Voice and Diction, and it taught me how to drop that Tennessee, Mississippi, Arkansas accent. And the studies did show that if I were to talk to someone, say, in California or Toronto, and I used my, you know, the accent that I had in high school, they'd automatically assume that I was an idiot.
Or a hillbilly.
Exactly.
Like
exactly.
Redneck.
Now, I'll tell
really
you this. Being from Nashville, there are people that I speak with that can't really tell where I'm from. They can't pick it out. You can tell I have an accent, but you can't regionalize it. When I speak to my father, my mother and father on the phone, my wife, who's from the East, has no idea what I'm saying. Because when I talk to them, I'll slow down and we start talking about biscuits and gravy and how's the farm and Daddy, did you get a new truck?
Bible
but
belt.
If I talk to a candidate in Chicago, I'm able
go
to talk
go.
About, exactly. I'm able to talk about the Cubs and have an intelligent conversation without them thinking, who is this guy and why is he calling me from Timbuktu, Mississippi?
Just hazing. Who said before that they were not for transparency?
Me.
Who
is Albright?
I'm all for integrity, but sometimes transparency goes too far.
He just doesn't like the term transparency.
Yeah, I don't like the term.
Give an example. Give an example. Can you?
I don't
to
know.
Clarify what I said, this is Scott. I will be as transparent as needed. I won't cross ethical boundaries.
Like transparency doesn't mean telling your candidate that you've got an offer for that. Man, I really hope you take this, dude. Because Daddy needs a new truck.
Pay my bills
because you sound desperate.
Yeah,
what would
Jerry?
What would you do if your client, if your candidate had a job offer from two clients, both of which, one's better than the other, the money's the exact same, your candidate says, what would you do?
I'm not into making career decisions for people, but I will tell them what I think of the technology, the work that they're doing, and how that might help them in the future.
That to me, is transparency. Now, forcing an opinion on somebody is forcing or helping them make a decision based solely upon your opinion is a different game.
That's a very nice, interesting situation. Would you ever tell the guy, listen, I think the other job's better for you?
I would never do that.
Why not?
Because it's just like bad. It's boyfriend and girlfriend.
No, he's got. There's two jobs. One's from another recruiter. One's from you. Would you ever say take the other job?
I would say, you know what? I'd be honest with the guy. Look, if it's between another recruiter and me.
Yeah.
I'm going to say, look, I want you to go to work for me, but you know what? I need you to be able to feel comfortable when you go to sleep at night. I'm not going to make that decision for you, and it's just like I said when you came in.
I got to stop you there. You're not transparent at all. When the opportunity comes and you can tell that other job is better for the guy, you bow out. You say, no, I'm not saying, right?
No, hold on, but our client is paying us to help them.
Wait a second. I think that's where you've got to be armed with the facts first, because your speculation, your opinion doesn't matter. You've got to be armed with the facts. And also, you may want to get the hiring manager involved, let them know what's going on, so they can reinforce what they've reinforced.
The reason that I posed it that way is because it just happened. My candidate took what I consider to be, which was the exact same money, exact same skill set, different parts of town, all different sorts of factors. The candidate took the job that I thought, and I made two offers to the person. Look, I've got this one or this one. And he said, I'm really confused. Which one do you think I should take? I can't make that decision for you. I can tell you my track record and, like I said, history with each company and the growth possibilities and blah, blah, blah. You have to make that decision. The candidate took the job that I would have never taken But you know what? The candidate loves it there. It's the old boyfriend-girlfriend thing. If I have a guy, if I have a buddy and his girlfriend breaks up with him, and the first thing I do a month later is call her, you know, a bad name, they could get back together in another month. Who's the bad guy? I am.
Excuse me.
So I'm not going to badmouth any client, because if that guy turns in, my candidate goes and lands a job at a crap company and turns into a manager later and knows that I badmouthed this company, how much business do you think I'm going to get?
I'm not going to tell the guy.
610. Hold on, Scott. Let's give 610 a chance to say hi. Have I called on you already?
610, that's Ryan Leary.
Ryan Leary,
hey.
You want to say something?
Yes.
You know what we're talking
What's
about?
What's going on?
He put a note up on Twitter while you were talking, Scott. He says, I don't know what they're talking about there. Can someone tell me? Do you know now?
Yeah, I know now. That was,
you
want to
say
back.
Something? You want to say something to Scott?
Yeah, I think I've been listening in. I had to cut in and out, but the whole transparency conversation, I completely agree with, I think, the way Jerry handles that. I'm not on the agency side anymore, but when I was there, that's exactly how we had to handle
that.
That was Scott. Sorry. You guys sound alike.
Because we're both from way down south.
Hillbillies.
See, now, Jerry, I was giving you all the props. Well, good. It was a good answer, Scott. Nice. You know, if I had an opportunity to put somebody in two or three different contracts, I never felt comfortable saying, you've got to go to this one because my bill rate was going to be higher. I'll put another candidate in that job. I agree.
You got to just help them figure it out. I mean, how hard is, you know, what's the big question
here?
It's, hey,
I mean,
dude,
I think in the end we're there
to start making some notes.
Honestly, you guys have never swayed. If you had if a candidate going to two jobs and one you were going to make 50% more, you never swayed the guy towards the higher job, because I find that
I
hard
have.
To believe.
Who's this? Who said that, Matt?
Matt Jones.
Come on, talk about that.
Nah.
I have. I mean,
done
in the
it.
Past, I have. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I've done it.
Yeah, but do I feel comfortable? I mean, I like the paycheck, sure, but in the end, I think it just puts more of a bad name on the recruiter. And
you can't
I got,
do that.
I got out of that years ago. I stopped doing that, and ever since then, I think my business has gotten better, and I've grown in my career tremendously.
Okay, area code 317. That's also Indiana, isn't it?
It is.
Who is it?
It's Andy.
Andy.
Andy Gregory, CGP. What a dumb name, but you're here. Welcome. Your first time on the show.
You know, you had me at the F-bomb in the open there.
I didn't say F-bomb. I didn't use that word today.
I thought I heard. Maybe I just misheard. You know.
No way. What do you want to say, Andy? You got a nice voice. You
no,
sound good on the radio.
Hey, man.
You want to say hi to Scott?
I've been participating. Hi, Scott. What's up?
How are you?
Well, why didn't you say your name? I heard this guy talk, and I didn't know who it was. I thought maybe it was the work farce.
Hey, I'm not about self-gloss here. I'm just,
okay.
You know, just contributing.
Do you have anything else to say?
I'm good.
You're good. Okay. There's a million people calling area code 111. Does anyone – who's 912? You want to say hi? Area code 912, wake up.
Georgia.
Okay. Who is it?
That's somebody in Georgia.
Yeah, I'm on the phone.
In Georgia.
It's Harry.
Savannah.
Okay, don't talk from Georgia. Okay, anybody else want to talk? There's a bunch of 111s. I can't tell who you are. Any of you want to talk? Now's your chance. I'm going to be quiet for 5 seconds.
This is Carla. I want to say hi. I've been interested 15 times during the show. I've had you on mute, but I just definitely wanted to say hi. And the things I've heard, I've enjoyed a lot.
There. She likes people. Did you know that you guys had on wait a second, Carla. You guys had on the Recruiting 101 thing. What's your motivation? Scott says he likes people, but Jerry was honest. He said, I want to make money for my family. But Carla, I believe her. She likes people, but she's on the corporate side. I don't think you could do it just because you like people on the external side. Anybody got an opinion?
You're right.
You're
totally
right. Best ever.
No way. Can't do it.
On the money.
Okay. Thanks, Carla. Anything else?
No, I was listening in before, and I heard when you were talking about motivation, and I agree.
How about a little louder, Carla?
I agree that fear is the strongest motivating force.
Okay, I don't think we were talking about that. Were we? Was that someone else's show or you know,
no,
from a few weeks?
This was the show. It was about 30 minutes ago. You were on motivation and people running to or running from things.
Oh, I see.
Okay.
Okay.
Leaving job. Why would people leave a job and, yeah, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Did
Scott,
you say running to versus running from?
Yes.
That sounds like a conversation that Recruiting Animal and I had earlier this week.
Who's talking?
Are you stealing my material now, Michael?
This is Harry Joyner. I didn't expect you. The marketing headhunter. Go ahead, talk.
Why didn't you expect me? I got to support
months.
The team.
You haven't been on for 6 months. That's why. Go ahead.
No, I've been busy. No, I just wanted to stop by and say hey.
Okay, have you listened to anything?
Yeah, a bit. I've been sort of lurking.
Do you have a bucket? Do you have a talent bucket or a matrix? Do you have a bunch of people in different categories? Do you keep them hot? Do you know if I need somebody, I'll go here first?
Yeah, I mean, sort of in my mind, I know what everybody wants to do in their career. But I have three buckets, but they're sort of buckets related to their competence in one of three areas. So what I do is online retail. And so there are three ways to build an online retail business. Number one, improve monthly unique visits. Number two, improve average order value. And number three, improve conversion rate.
You know,
and,
you're talking so fast. Geez. Does anybody understand what he's saying? Say it again slowly. I can't understand you.
Well, it's very special to what I do, so I'll explain it, but I don't want to tie up everybody's time with this. But there's three ways and only three ways to build an online business, right? You improve monthly unique visits, right, the number of eyeballs that you get to a website. You improve the conversion rate, the number of people that you convert once they come to your website. And number three is the average order value.
What is the topic here?
I'm completely
He asked
off.
Me if I had any talent buckets. And what I said is that I do have talent buckets, but they're not talent buckets that anybody else would, you know, would mean anything to anybody else.
Didn't
so you're talking about
it?
How your blog, you're talking about how you use your blog to generate business. Is that right?
No, I'm talking about when candidates call me, how I get a sense for what kind of value they're going to create for any client I happen to be talking to at any given point in time.
Mm-hmm.
It's like if you were having a conversation with a football player, right, and you were a football fan, probably the first question you would ask is, do you play offense, defense, or special teams? And then they would say, well, I'm offensive something or other, and you'd go, okay, well, that tells me a lot about what you do and what your orientation is. Well, my version of that is, do you specialize in improving monthly unique visits?
Oh, okay,
order
for your category of people. Okay, so your guys are e-commerce guys, so you categorize them right away. You've got
exactly.
A few categories. You
and those are my buckets. And so everybody that goes into my database is, you know, they see themselves as a specialist in one of those three areas. So
okay.
It's a trick answer to a straightforward question. I'm sorry about that.
No, I think it's a great answer to that question. I do the same thing. I work in the HR space primarily, and so I end up, you know, asking very similar questions. Are you in the talent acquisition, the talent management space? It's pretty much the first separator question that I get into.
Right.
Makes sense.
Makes sense to me.
Okay. Anybody else want to raise a topic, or do I have to come up with them myself? Scott, you got something else?
I love the laugh in the background.
Well, here's one of the things he had on his series. What's the hardest part of recruiting?
Not the hardest. The most tedious is reference checks.
Reference checks? That's the easiest part, and I find it fun.
No,
I
didn't say it was hard. I said it was tedious.
Well,
it's tedious.
The topic is hard, not tedious.
Hard. What's the hardest part of recruiting?
Hardest part for me is telling somebody they didn't get a job after they've absolutely blown the interview.
Well, don't they know by then? Don't they know they blew the interview?
No.
No one does.
They think they got it. They think they nailed it.
Yeah, it was when Jason came out. It's what he said, the death blow or whatever it was yesterday. We have there's a term in my office, and it's happened multiple times where someone will call after the interview and they say, Scott, man, I nailed it. And I automatically think you just blew it is what you did.
I had that just 2 weeks ago. The guy called me up after his telephone interview, and he says, yeah, I think that's a great fit. And I think they know it too. And then, you know, I was gathering a little more feedback, and he then let me know how he had even suggested a few tips on how to rearrange their environment and some new softwares. And she said that guy was the most arrogant jerk I've spoken to in years.
I'm surprised they didn't hire me right then.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you know what, Jerry? All the job hunting guys, they say go in there and try to problem solve for them right away. Tell them, I would do this differently. I would do that. I'll improve this for you.
I do not tell my candidates
no.
that.
Oh, really?
No.
React.
Answer the question and talk about your experience. Don't try to counsel them. That's not what they're. That's unless they ask you specifically.
They find out what their problems are and solve them. And you can do that in advance with your research on the company. I got to hear this. You're saying that's not a good idea.
No,
that's a bunch of crap.
You're not. You know what? You're not there to. The candidate's not there to counsel the client. The candidate's there to answer the client's questions to see whether or not they're a good fit. If they say, "What would you do?" Yeah, then ask that. But if they want to ask about syntax and a piece of code, don't look at their piece of code and say it's oh, this isn't very good, or you should have done it.
Piece of crap, because
you should have done it this way. You know what? You're going to be arrogant. And they're not going to hire you.
I completely agree with that. That is, all these career counselors telling people to walk in there with problem solves and mouse traps to solve all their problems are just blowing freaking smoke, because they will piss off the hiring leader or the HR person, and it's game over right there.
I'm blown away by you guys. Harry, are you still here?
Yeah.
What about, you're dealing with e-commerce. These people can actually look at the websites and analyze them. Do you recommend that people do that and then go in and tell people how they would improve them?
They kind of expect them to.
If that's what their job is.
Yeah, I'm gonna share, I guess, with everybody a little framework that I use. I mean, I tell all my candidates to do this, and it's something that over 5 years has worked like a charm for a lot of people. But basically, with the definition of marketing, I wish I'd thought of this. It's Sergio Zeman, the guy who used to be the chief marketing officer of Coca-Cola. He came up with this definition, and it's great. Marketing is selling more stuff to more people more often for more money. That's it. Marketing is selling more stuff to more people more often for more money. So what I tell all of my candidates to do is write down on 4 sheets of paper, right at the top of the first sheet, write more stuff, and then number 1 to 10. And then the next sheet, more people, number 1 to 10. More often, third sheet, number 1 to 10, more money, 1 to 10. And then come up with 10 ways, you got to rack your brain, that you're going to be able to sell more stuff. What does that mean? Does it mean selling old products to new customers, old products to old customers? How are you going to improve the size of your house file? I mean, there's a million things that you need to address with that, but get very specific about how you're going to sell more stuff. And then second page, to more people. How are you going to get more
people? We get the idea. And they come
if they do that, then they come in, and it's not being so presumptuous as to say, look, here's a 90-day plan for your company's growth. But the client certainly gets an accurate idea of how the candidate is going to be able to plug and play in their organization, and that's really what people want.
Is that a problem? These guys are in IT, and they're saying that's not going to – although Michael Homula is in HR, he said the same thing. They're saying that's not going to fly. When you say it, it sounds much more modest than they were implying. I'm just really curious about that.
But you know what? Guys, developers aren't modest. They've got the social skills of a plant, some of them. So they're not sales guys. They're coders. They write code.
Yeah, well, the code is basically work product for somebody else. I mean, how is that code going to help the organization, innovate better, sell more, be more efficient?
But to ask a software developer to do that, that's not what they're trained to do.
Yeah, they don't know anything about that larger play.
Even a business analyst doesn't know that. Not in IT. A coder knows what they're given and what they're told to do and how to do it probably better than anybody else.
I, everything you're saying makes perfect sense, and I'm not arguing that. You're the professional in that area, and I'm not. It's just that everybody that I chat with, their job is a means to an end. It's not an end unto itself. And the ultimate end with any job is customer intimacy, right? And so whatever it is you're doing, whether it's accounting or finance or cross-docking pallets down in the warehouse, right, it's all ultimately should have an impact on the customer experience.
Okay,
hey guys.
Not interested in that. Wait a sec. Before we're finished, we're almost done. I want to tell you the hardest part of recruiting, sourcing. Sourcing is the hardest part of recruiting. Does anyone disagree with me?
I completely disagree.
I as well.
Who said you just made $20,000 and realizing that no, you didn't, and as a matter of fact, you owe somebody their $15,000 back.
What'd you say?
That's the hardest part.
Hey guys, I gotta bug out. This is Scott. I gotta get.
Scott, you're a good man.
Okay, Scott, thanks for coming on. We're gonna finish this question and move right into Maureen's show. But
see you guys.
Bye bye.
Yeah, later.
Bye. Well, this is Maureen.
Yeah.
Maureen,
I'm
you
here.
There?
Yes.
Okay. We're not going to play the music. I want to ask this question before we go into your show.
Go ahead.
I think sourcing is the hardest part. Somebody said I'm completely wrong. Who was that? Not Jerry. Somebody else.
I think it was me, Homula. I disagree. I just don't think it's that hard to source anymore. I think it's harder to connect and build relationships and ultimately be able to identify that person's motivating factor to leave than it is to source. With all of the technology and all of the information that's out there. But it does depend on how you're defining sourcing. I mean, if sourcing is just name gen, it's easy. If sourcing is some of the stuff Maureen does, that gets a little bit touchier, and I think it does
That's
get a little bit
gen?
More difficult.
She's a name gener. That's her job. Come on, why is name gen so easy? Give me an example. You can't find everybody you need on LinkedIn.
Sure you can find enough people to handle whatever you're doing, though. You don't need everybody's name. You just need enough names to generate the candidates, to generate the send-outs, to generate the place.
Yeah.
You don't need them all,
Michael
animal.
Homula. Michael, I want Michael Homula to answer. He hasn't been on for a year, too. Listen, you're
saying... I agree.
Give us an example. You can get names really easily for any search?
Yeah, I really can because and Jerry just hit it. I mean, I hate to sound like I'm just repeating what he said, but I can generate enough.
A lot of people sound that way.
I can generate enough names off of LinkedIn that'll generate enough names from that. I can talk to 10 people and turn that into 20 or 30 additional names to talk to. And the other thing is that, you know, and I don't want to – I know it's another topic for another time, but, you know, when I talk to really good, talented people that are in my matrix or my puddle or my pool, whatever you want to call it, I tend to hang out in that puddle and ask those people again and again, who do they know, who do they know, who do they know? And that just continues to feed itself. It becomes a self-fulfilling recruitment prophecy for me. So
okay.
I don't have to use some of the other things that other people use.
So you know what? So what you're saying is, what I would say the second hardest thing in recruiting is getting referrals, and you're saying both of them are real easy for you. You identify 10 people, you turn them into 30, just like turning the fishes and wine into enough to feed the masses. Is that right?
Well, I mean, I think you just oversimplified it a tiny bit, but yes, I do think that stuff has gotten easier. I think name gen is easy. I think getting referrals is slightly harder than that, but I do think that, you know, if you get comfortable with your script and you ask the right kinds of questions, yeah, it does get easier with some experience and some time. Jerry, I don't know if you'd agree or disagree with that, but...
I'm not a huge referraler. I just hope that they volunteer some names. I'll admit that.
Okay,
animal.
You know
what? Animal.
I want to do something.
Don't tell anybody. We're not recording anymore, are we?
Yes, we are. It's going
what?
For 90 minutes.
I never said that.
I didn't hear you say anything, but I just want to say, I'm going to be doing a series on referrals, okay? So I'd like Michael Homula to come back for that if he wants to give us some of his secrets. We're going to go into Maureen's show in a few minutes. There's 17 people here, or 16. Does anyone
Animal, let me
want
drop
to
a
say
comment real quick.
Any, pardon me?
Let me drop a comment real quick. It's Jeff Peterson in Pittsburgh.
Go ahead.
Hey, the hardest part of recruiting, and it leads into this conversation too about sourcing, is the hardest part is if you're looking for somebody that's not attainable. In other words, if you have a rec from somebody that, this person just really doesn't exist. It's impossible to find this person. It goes beyond the purple squirrel. Then that's what makes sourcing difficult. I mean, there's no way you can find somebody if they're just not out there. In other words, if someone's trying to find, like, a developer that's also a salesperson, for instance. I mean, let's just toss that weird example out there. Those people some of those people just don't exist. So how are you supposed to find them?
You can't. Bail. I wouldn't even try something like that. I'm not a magician.
Yeah. Or how about I'm in Pittsburgh, which is a horrible market for developers. Somebody wants a $60,000 developer, $60,000 a year developer with 10 years of experience and all the certifications you could ever dream of. Person doesn't exist. You're not going to find them. So how do you source for something like that? Well, you can't.
That's more where the harder part of the job becomes your ability to hopefully influence your customer based on the marketplace feedback that you're sharing because of your experience and the work that you've done for them on the position. Validating the kind of person they're looking for is going to be nearly, if not impossible, to find.
Right, and then you'll find some customers and some industries that are notoriously cheap, which is a total different conversation. And, hey, they just aren't going to budge. I mean, there's no way they can budge on that.
Okay, you guys are blowing me away with the ease with which you identify people, except for the people who don't exist, and then turn those guys into referrals. I'm very impressed. I mean, Maureen should be theoretically out of a job because these guys have no problem identifying people.
No, Maureen's in business because the vast majority of people don't know how to do this right, and they need her expertise.
Right.
I never hear anybody talking about jigsaws. Anybody using Jigsaw for developing names? I mean, there's names, numbers, emails. There's all sorts of good information in there, too. Anybody use that?
I haven't used that in a while. We're using that here. I haven't used it in a while.
Jigsaw's a good tool to grab 30, 40 names from, and you can start dialing for dollars. I mean, that's a great way to get going.
We're going to move into the telephone sourcing show. Anybody's welcome to stay on, but thank you. I really enjoyed it. But Jerry, was it a good show?
It was a good show.
Thank you very much. Cheerio!
Get in through the back window. Let the vibe move us through. But now she's locked up on that wall of love. Now the fans over the room.
Hey, Maureen.
Hey. I had a question. Is that person that was asking about Jigsaw still on?
I'm still here.
Are you still there?
I'm still here.
Jeff Peterson.
Yeah, when was the last time? I haven't used it in a long time. Are you using it currently?
I am, and you know what? I'll be honest, I ponied up for their year-long subscription. There's like a fee version, and then there's a free version.
The free version, the one you're using, what percentage is good? I mean,
he paid. He uses the pay version, Maureen. He paid.
You paid. Okay. You said you ponied up. Okay.
Yeah.
What percentage are good? You pull 30 or 40 names. What percentage of the information is dead right on?
You know, I'm finding for what I'm looking for, and usually, you know, anywhere from, you know, 70% is pretty clean. The nice part is that you can update those contacts. I mean, not to get too tactical here or whatever, but yeah, you can update the contacts, get your points back, and, you know, you can use them for other things.
Yeah.
How much does it cost for the pay version of Jigsaw?
You know what? I negotiated it to like 4K for the year, and I don't know if I'll use it again for the next year. It's great for sure, but I think you can get. I think with all the different people you find online, you can put them into the free version. You can get your points that way too.
Okay, so just in case people don't know, you get as many names out as you yourself put in, right?
Yeah, right. So like if you're using the free version, it's like a one for one thing. You put a contact in, you get one back for free.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so just like that. And there's like 12 million, 13 million contacts in there. Great way to start phone sourcing if that's what your game is, you know, if that's what your bag is.
I'm going to cut out. I'm going to go grab a sandwich. It was a great show, Animal.
Bye, Jerry.
See you, Maureen. Nice to see you around.
Okay.
Take it easy. Oh, yeah, because Maureen hasn't been away. But, Jeff, just tell everybody your book while you're on. Jeff's got a new book.
Sure. Hey, I appreciate the plug. It's The Sorcerer's Playbook, and it's available out on Amazon right now.
How much is it? $40?
Yeah, you know, I was getting some flack over that. It's $39.99, and if you want to talk to me offline, I can probably give it to you at cost. It's not a big deal.
Okay. For all the people listening to this show, they know that now. Does anybody else want to talk to Maureen? There's a lot of 111s here and 1610, area code 610. Who's area code 610?
It's still Ryan. Ryan Lear. And you know, hey Jeff, what's going on? I'm using I actually used the free version. The free version of Jigsaw.
Oh, you are. Okay.
Yeah. So
do you find? Do you think there's a difference between the free version and the paid version in results accuracy?
We have, you know, one of our accounts does have the paid version. I think I get just as much, if not more, information out of it, only because I know how to use it more than those that have the paid version. It goes back to the whole, I think, from the last topic on sourcing. If you know how to do it, you can do it. If you don't, you're going to have challenges. And, you know, I mean, obviously, Jeff knows how to do it. But for someone who doesn't know how to do it, it's definitely easier for the paid version. But, you know, if you're going to put in, if you know you're going to use it X number of times during a month, just make sure you plan appropriately and put that number of people in there. And that's what I've been doing. So I
want to give us an example, Ryan, of a search you've done there that you've had success with?
I use it for all of our searches. Mostly, I'd say director level or above is really where I go, and I try to save it for that. I usually populate about 35 to 40 a month.
You're doing director level and above?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you find that useful? You find Jigsaw useful for that?
Yeah, because most people, I think, that are going to take time to populate that are going to.
Okay,
put
now
in,
if you were doing the worker bees, the you know, I call them the grunts, the ones in there doing the heavy lifting.
Like those IT guys, these guys are talking about, right?
Exactly. How good would it be for that? Or do you not do that?
I've never done that, but the way I would approach that is just look for the managers and get in there and start sourcing yourself.
And source that's down.
Where, yeah. I mean, you can always just get the higher level contact.
You know, can you, Brian? I know you're a nice guy. Can you talk a little louder? Just do me a favor.
Can you hear me now?
Yes. Now
I can hear. Is that better?
But when you say source down, Ryan, you're going to have to get in there. You're going to have to call into those managers and try to get into their groups. Is that correct?
Yeah.
You're not
going to
find them on Jigsaw or. For the most part.
You might. I've never.
You find a few, right?
Yeah. I've never looked for them. I always stuck to the higher level roles.
Yeah.
Okay. So when Jeff Peterson, when you're talking about using that for sourcing leads, you're talking about the same thing. Is it mostly directors that you find in there?
No, see, I do it a little differently, and maybe we just have a different approach, but the reason that I got an account with Jigsaw is to really kind of go after more of those mid-level people, the grunts, the whatever you want to call them. A lot of these people are the ones you're not going to find with accounts out on LinkedIn. You're not going to find through other means out there for sourcing.
You're finding them on Jigsaw, though?
I'm finding a pretty good bit. Like, let's say, for instance, you have a client that has a need for a software engineer. We're talking
right.
a mid-level software engineer, 5 to 7 years, whatever, certain type of skill set, Java or ASP.NET, whatever it is. I mean, you know, you can find a lot of these people in there, but here's the problem. You can find the titles, okay?
Yeah.
So you can, you know, quickly grab out 50 to 100 names and run an email campaign or run a phone sourcing campaign, but you don't know what those folks are doing as software engineers. You don't know what discipline they have, what their skill set is.
Right.
It might be a little bit of a shot in the dark, but they're at least the mid-level guys that you're looking for. At the director level, VP level type folks, I mean, those are folks that are going to have the accounts, from what I'm seeing, out on LinkedIn and so forth.
Yeah, for the most part.
Right.
Although more and more are realizing that they up their stock price when they get themselves on LinkedIn, don't you think? I'm talking about the worker bees.
Yeah, I mean, anybody who has a good title that they want to, you know, kind of shout from the rooftops or, you know, to that effect. I mean,
but we're still talking about a very small percentage of the workforce. Do you agree with that?
Sure. Yeah, hold on.
I have a question for the Maureen. These other guys were all saying that they have no trouble identifying
people. Well, if you listen closely, they said it's a place to start.
These two guys are telling you something different. They're saying that they have to get names there and then do some kind of telephone sourcing or some kind of work, hard work, what I consider to be hard work, to get the real names you're after. Am I right?
I just think it's part of the game at this point. Once you're doing it so long and you know how to work the game,
You don't consider sourcing to be a difficult thing either, right? Like I said, it's the hardest thing in recruiting. You don't think so?
7 years ago when I started, yeah. I was afraid to pick the phone up. Now I'll pick it up and I'll talk all day. It doesn't matter to me.
I might disagree with you a little bit on it too, Animal. I mean, it's not exactly the hardest thing to do. I mean, it's manageable now with all the different tools and the technologies and the different things that you hear about out there.
You know what?
It's kind of like when you hear people talk about Boolean strings and searching. You know, anybody can put it together, but you got to know how to finesse the words and the turns and how you're going to structure it to make it work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think the same is true with phone sourcing. You could talk to a million people, but if you can't finesse the conversation or talk to the people the way they need to be spoken to, then you're out of luck anyway.
And that's where I want to come in too, because you know the one thing that annoys me the most about other recruiters that call me that don't even really know me, and that within the first 60 seconds of the conversation, if they're asking me, hey, who do you know for this opportunity, or can you help me? And I'm thinking to myself, no, I don't know anybody, and no, I don't want to help you, because you haven't really – I mean, I don't have any type of a relationship with somebody for 60 seconds. You know, you have to kind of you kind of have to build a little rapport there, I think. You know what I mean? That's one of my biggest pet peeves about recruiters is that
– Well, give me an example of how would they call you out of the blue. What kind of rapport can they build?
Well, you know, I try not to – when I'm on the phone with someone and they're maybe not a fit for the opportunity, I just basically say, hey, look, I'm just going to pass you off something. a description of a position that I have and take it for what it's worth, you know, that type of thing. And if they have someone that they know, they'll refer it back to me. I put that dialogue in the email. But I honestly hate it when someone's sitting there on the phone and they're just trying to peg me, you know, hit me up for name after name after name. You know, I'll give you something if I feel like I know somebody, honestly, for that opportunity. But it's honestly, every recruiter nowadays, that's the first thing out of their mouth is, hey, who do you know? It's like, well, I don't even know you. How am I supposed to? You know what I mean? It's like a lot of recruiters are referral happy nowadays. It's like everybody wants to just hit you and bludgeon you for everything you got and then run away. You know what I mean?
Okay. Yeah, but you know what? They know you're out there for your – even if you have a chat with the guy and find out what he's doing, they know it's mercenary. Maybe I'm wrong and I'm
like
too cynical.
Like anybody that knows me knows that – excuse me. Anybody knows me knows that I'm more than happy to share free information. I mean, I do the free webinars. I do all the free stuff online.
Yeah, but they don't know you. That's what you're saying. You're making a call to someone you don't know.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's why I try to at least build a little bit of rapport. You know, you give something, you get something. You know what I mean?
You gave him a job description that he's not good for, right? You didn't give him anything.
So if I'm talking to a software engineer that I found off of Jigsaw, and so I'm looking for a .NET person. You're a J2EE Java guy. Okay. Well, hey, I'm just going to pass you along the job description, and there you go, just in case you may come across anybody. But I'm not trying to, again, I'm not trying to bludgeon them and really kind of put them on the spot.
Okay, now I see what you're telling me. Area code 813 just called in. You want to say anything about this?
Hey, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Excellent, very cool. First time calling in here, you guys. Now this
Julie
Hankins? This is, it is.
You can tell your voice anywhere.
Who is it?
Right. It's Ryan.
It's Ryan. Now,
who is this? Who is this? Julie?
Julie Hankins.
Hi.
Julie Hankins.
You were on recruiting blogs before, right?
Yeah. Ryan gave me a little time. Yeah. No, as far as calling in, I would love to, as far as calling out and talking with people, you know, definitely. You don't want to say, hey, who do you know? You just have a dialogue. It's just about relationships, guys. It's just about the same thing we're doing right here. You just talk, you know. It's like, yeah, I'm a recruiter. I got a job. You know how this works. And, you know, you've given your name. This is what I'm looking for. You know, I don't know if it's right for you. You know, you just be honest. And that's to me, that's what I do. And that's what I have success with. But I'm just kind of that aw-shuck southerner hillbilly over here, so.
But you're saying that you're very successful at getting referrals. Is that right?
Yeah, I am. I am because I let them talk. I just say, hey, you know, and who, you know, I don't know if it's right for you. I was given your name, and you know, let me tell you what I'm looking for. If it's right for you, great. If not, maybe you know of somebody. Yeah, I'd love to chat with you. That's it. And you're just real. You're not with a mission, you know, and you're just real and trying to just strike a conversation. I mean, calling out of the blue. Actually, I just got two guys that in Chicago that people are flipping out that I actually got them on the phone, let alone they're now candidates. So, because I just, you know, I don't have an agenda when I talk to people. But I'm a different animal, so.
Maureen?
Yeah, do we have anybody on the show that was in the chat yesterday where we talked about the Socratic method as it relates to telephone sourcing? You know,
no.
You were there.
I was there.
Yeah.
You ask these guys. I'm not your audience. These people are.
Right.
I was not there, no.
Animal, what did you think about that? The script
well,
that we
I think
up?
It's hard. I think telephone sourcing is hard. What I was saying to them, and Ryan disagreed, is that, like, when I listen to you teaching people to do it, I mean, it's all, you know, talk to her about this, distract her with this, be polite. It's really a hand-to-hand combat every minute, every second. And he's good with Ryan saying it's nothing, right? I can just, you know, it's a habit. I have no problem.
They're doing it in a different way, I think. I think they're spending the time that it takes, and they're formatting their sourcing function as a recruiting function. They're calling up, and they're building relationships with actual people.
Said they get names from Jigsaw, and they work through the department,
They
right?
call those names, and then they work through the departments. I wouldn't call it difficult. I would agree with them on that, but I would call it very, very time-consuming, and I think they would agree with that.
Oh, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't think anything's necessarily easy, or you can just dismiss anything as easy, but it's part of the job. It's baked into it now. So it's something that I know when I come in. I mean, I'm confident in what I'm doing. I can pick the phone up and I can talk to somebody when I need to, or I know when to shut up and when I'm talking to somebody and let them talk.
Where do you work, Ryan? I don't know what you do.
I work with Conexa.
Oh, okay. You're a recruiter. Yeah. You're a corporate recruiter.
No. We're an RPO company.
Oh, okay.
So we have multiple clients across all different industries.
Okay. Okay.
So, I mean, we have some teams that use tools like Jigsaw that the customer pays for. We have others that don't, so.
Maureen, you got questions for these guys?
Do I have questions for them?
No.
I think what we're talking about are two different things. I mean, they're talking about sourcing as part of the recruiting function, and as he just agreed, it is very time-consuming because what you're doing as a sourcer/recruiter is building relationships at the same time. What I'm talking about as a phone sourcer is I will call in, I will approach the gatekeeper.
They're not building. No, they're not talking just about, you guys aren't talking just about referrals,
yes, they are.
Right? You're not getting names at Jigsaw and then going and talking to those directors and getting referrals from them.
They're starting with those names on Jigsaw, and they're drilling down. They're trying to drill down into organizations.
Just like you do, not through referrals.
That is what I do, except I don't do it in the same way. They're doing it in a recruiting function where they're calling, they're telling them, I've got this job opportunity.
No, they're not. Are you guys, Jeff Peterson started it. Are you guys calling up these companies and then finding out who's in the department? Are you calling those directors and saying, I'm Jeff Peterson, I'm Ryan Leary, I'm working on this position? They're not calling the directors, Maureen.
No.
Can you guys clarify?
Both. I'm doing both. So, I mean, if I'm recruiting on specific roles, then, yeah, I'm going to call in and I'm gonna poke around that way. If I'm not recruiting specific roles, and a large part of, I think, of your job as a sourcer is to understand the entire organization. So if I'm going to call in an organization, I'm going to start building. If I talk to the receptionist, the gatekeeper, if I talk to a line manager or a hands-on guy, I'm going to start building that organization. And when I get off the phone...
How do you do that?
Just by having a conversation.
And how do you start that conversation?
Just talking. Just, hey, I'm working on some research. And, I think the most popular way for me is I'm always doing research. So, hey, I'm doing some research on a specific topic. I was told that you could possibly help me out. Talk to them and go from there and say, oh, I'm not the right guy. Oh, really, what position are you in? Who would be the right guy? Now, I've got his name, title, that person's name and title, and I start to build that chart. A month and a half down the line, I have certain targets, so I'll throw Merck out there just at the top of my head. So if I'm going into Merck's development department, I'm going to know from top to bottom exactly what that department or organization looks like in, say, a month, month and a half. I'll have everyone's name and title.
When you're finished?
Yeah, when I'm finished, and then I'll use that as a recruiting.
Because you'll spend a month to a month and a half developing out that org chart.
Depending upon how large it is, yeah. I mean, some organizations have...
It's 200 people. It's going to take
you
a month.
Yeah, it could be 200 people. Yeah, absolutely.
Right.
And that's a full-time job. Yeah, absolutely.
Right.
But that just couples right into the recruiting function as well, though.
Who said that?
And that's really... This is Jeff again, Jeff Peterson. And that's really helpful, that technique, if you know that the type of folks that you need come from, a very small niche of companies, 1, 2, 3 companies, you can afford to spend a ton of time working on those. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're, if you're working on maybe onesie, twosie type opportunities with different clients, and you know that you can find these folks at dozens of different places, hundreds even, then yeah, you might, employ a different technique, like where I might be randomly picking out, let's use that software engineer position again. I might randomly pull out 100 names of software engineers in a certain geographic location from Jigsaw and send them a direct message. I'm trying to connect with them directly. And if I happen to get referrals out of it, great.
So if you're working on an arthritic drug marketing manager position, and you know that 5 different pharmaceutical companies make an arthritic drug, you will go into those marketing organizations at those 5 different pharmaceutical companies to find the marketing managers for those pharmaceutical drugs. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's pretty much in line. Yeah, you do a little bit of homework. You find out
where you can find those type of folks.
Now, when you call one of them or get one of them on the phone, how willing are they to cooperate with you?
Normally, when I call somebody, I'm just strictly, you know, giving them a head, you know, straight up approach.
This is Jeff.
Yeah, this is Jeff. I have an opportunity, and I came across your name. And
how'd you get my name?
I pretty much just tell them right where I got their name. Your name's in Jigsaw.
Okay.
No, I don't really sugarcoat things. To be honest, I have a straight up approach.
I'm not giving you the business. I'm just giving you the blowback.
Oh, yeah.
You know that I could foresee coming. Did they say that to you ever?
Oh yeah, yeah. You'd be surprised. I wouldn't
be surprised.
I just say, hey, look, I found your name in LinkedIn or Jigsaw or wherever I did find their name, and I just let them know exactly what I'm trying to do. I don't try to sugarcoat it or anything like that. And some of them will say, hey, can we take this conversation offline? You know, can we talk like maybe later tonight? You know, things like that. You know, some people don't obviously want to talk at work. So.
Okay, so you go right at it. You tell them what you're all about,
uh-huh.
And what percentage of those people are willing to engage with you?
Oh shoot, I have no idea.
You have no idea?
I mean, I've been doing it for a number of years.
It depends on the industry, doesn't it?
Sure.
Something like arthritic drug managers, they would be difficult to engage.
Yeah, and I think Jerry and a couple other people have mentioned earlier that some of those developers are introvert. You know, that's the stereotype they get, and it's pretty true.
Exactly.
A lot of those guys, you know, you're going to have a tough time talking to them. Some of them actually just prefer instant message or email, which is pretty weak. But,
if you had to find an arthritic drug manager out of 5 companies, and let's say there's a pool there, maybe 50 between the 5, how long would that take you to identify all of them? Just roughly.
Just within five companies?
Yeah, within 5 companies.
Well,
let's say 50
names,
arthritic drug managers.
I'm not sure. It depends on how much time to the day that I'm going to devote to that client. Is that my only client? Usually it's not.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, the client can be a hiring manager. That could take some time.
Depends
on how large the organization is, how large the groups are.
Mm-hmm.
There's different variables there.
Right, exactly.
I mean, that could take
any way you cut it and slice it and dice it, it's very time consuming.
Oh, sure. And you know, you're going in with the fact, you know, at least I'm going in with the point that, hey, I'm trying to get a couple of good guys, a couple of good girls, whatever it is for these positions, and then I'm going to stop. I'm not going to, you know, keep turning them.
Now, if you could call a phone sourcer and say to her, I think there's about 50 amongst these 5 companies. Can you go in and get that for me? And she delivers those back to you within 3 days. What's that worth to you?
Well, see, I have my own program within my company called Channels. So, yeah, I mean, it's probably worth, you know, a certain amount per hour. Sure. I mean, just like
what's
a contractor.
What's it worth?
Oh, I'm not sure.
You had to put a dollar value on it. What would you put?
I'm not sure, but I know that's
why not? You know, nobody wants to talk about money. Let's talk about money. What is that worth?
You don't have to answer her.
I wouldn't know. I mean, to be honest, I mean,
animal.
Some of the services,
okay, thanks.
Some of the services that I'm charging for can be anywhere from, you know, $25 an hour up to $100 an hour for different types of sourcing. So I mean, who knows? I mean, depends on what kind of, you know, project it is.
Well, let's say you made a placement out of those 50 names, and
how much are you charging?
I charge by the name, but let's say you made a placement out of those 50 names and you collected a $35,000 fee. And if you had 50 arthritic drug managers, you would pretty much make a placement out of 50. And you collected a $35,000 fee. What is that worth? Just the time savings that's worth.
I don't know, but you know, to be honest, though, on a program like this, I probably wouldn't, to be honest, you know, be comfortable sharing all the different fees that I associate with, you know, with my company and things like that. I mean,
you don't have to because the time's up.
Okay.
And I'm
sure
we're probably
your
boring the hell out of everybody with that.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Maureen, actually, I thought you asked some good questions at the end. 813, sorry you didn't get to talk too much, but Maureen didn't call on you. But she can't see the dashboard.
Oh, okay.
Say goodbye to your guests, Maureen, and thank them for coming here.
Yeah, thanks for calling. If you thought we got off track, I apologize, but I thought it was interesting.
I thought it was interesting. Goodbye, everybody.